It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. During the 2008 presidential campaign, when candidates, particularly Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, were talking about overhauling healthcare in America, progressives were advocating for a single-payer health system. What we ended up with is the Affordable Care Act, which, like it or not, does not resemble single-payer healthcare. So what does single-payer look like? Well, one need look no further than England, home to the world's largest single-payer health system. How does it work? And would it work here in the United States? Here now to help us answer these questions and more is Sir David Nicholson, who was the CEO of England's National Health Service. He is in Pittsburgh as the keynote speaker at a global health conference hosted by UPMC. Sir David Nicholson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
What is single-payer healthcare? How does it work?
Essentially, what happens is that money for healthcare is collected through general taxation. So it's progressive. So what happens is that the more you earn, the more tax you pay, the more you contribute to healthcare generally. That resource is given to the Department of Health, and then it's allocated out to the NHS. And we allocate it out to a group of organisations called clinical commissioning groups, which are dominated by clinicians and may essentially purchase services from hospitals.
And how has it worked in England? Do people there like it?
When asked, the British people say that the NHS is one of the greatest achievements of our society, and it is well-regarded and well-supported. It treats over a million people every 36 hours. Between 92 and 94% of those people say they have a satisfactory or very satisfactory experience of healthcare. We generally get between 70 and 80% approval ratings by our population. It's a well-regarded, well-supported healthcare system. But sometimes we have problems, like any healthcare system, like the American system or any other. Sometimes bad things happen to patients. But generally speaking, people are very positive and supportive to the healthcare system.
When did England start its National Healthcare Service?
Well, it's interesting that we're speaking today on the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings, a particularly poignant, I think, moment for a Brit like me to be in the United States, given the work that the two countries did together on that particular day. And the NHS was born out of the end of the Second World War. It started in 1948 as a part of a wide-ranging set of reforms put in place in England after the Second World War.
What were the problems that existed in England with regard to health care before, during, and immediately after World War II? What were the things that the leaders of the country looked at and said, we need to fix, and how did it lead to this particular fix?
They were very motivated by the experience of the First World War. After the First World War, there was great deprivation amongst the people of Great Britain, and there really was this idea that we would create in 1948 a home fit for heroes, as it was identified at the time. We had a healthcare system which had developed over the last 300 or 400 years, actually, which had a voluntary sector, a private sector, and a publicly funded and organised sector. And they have brought those three things together into one unified healthcare system. And the strapline at the time was in place of fear. The issue, I think, facing the British population at that time is that there was no guarantee that you could get healthcare, and there was no guarantee about the quality of healthcare that you got. And people were genuinely worried and fearful for falling ill, because that could often involve poverty, losing your possessions, losing your house, losing your family, all of those things. So the idea was to have a safety net for everybody so that you would get away from the idea that people would fear ill health.
What you just described in terms of all of the problems that were identified with healthcare in England seems to describe what we have here, more or less, now in the United States.
Well, obviously, I don't really want to comment on the detail of your own healthcare system, because it's for your people to decide what best suits your culture and your people. But what we do know is that universal healthcare, the idea that healthcare should be for the whole population, is a very liberating thing for populations. It takes away the fear. And taking away that fear, I think, liberates people to live much more fulfilling lives. And that's why I'm passionate about universal healthcare. That's why you'll find that most people in the NHS are passionate about this idea that everyone has a right to access to healthcare. And not only that, we identify those people that find it hard to connect with healthcare services, and we go out and outreach and get them in.
One criticism that we hear is that a single-payer plan would be socialism. I mean, this comes up in the United States in debates all the time, that it would be socialism, a government takeover of the healthcare industry. What is your response?
Well, a couple of things, really. The first thing I'd say is that most healthcare systems around the world now are a mixture of public and private systems. In fact, as you're no doubt aware, the American government now spends more than our government per head of population on healthcare. So when you look at, and in our system, we are trying to think about how we can bring some of the expertise and the innovation of private healthcare and also give patients more choice. So what I think you can see across the world is a convergence. People are coming from different angles, but we're all coming to a general mixture of public and private healthcare.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but when you talk about the mix of public and private, we already have somewhat of a government healthcare plan here with regard to citizens age 65 and older in the form of Medicare, right?
Yeah, that's right. You have that arrangement at the moment. And one of the great benefits of single payer and that kind of approach is that it significantly, certainly in our experience, significantly reduces the overheads that you have to spend. So more of every pound that we spend, every dollar that we spend on healthcare goes directly to the patients, and less of it goes to the administration of the system overall. We have very, very low administrative costs for our healthcare system, something in the region of 2 or 3%.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA. My guest is Sir David Nicholson, former CEO of England's National Health Service. Other criticisms that come up when it comes to national health systems or so-called socialized or socialized medicine is a lack of choices and long waiting periods. What about that?
That was certainly a criticism put against the NHS 15 years ago. Over the last 10 years in particular, we have completely changed the nature of that. So, for example, if you need elective care in the NHS, you can go to any NHS hospital, over 300 of them across the country, and almost any private sector hospital to have your elective care treated. So we've completely changed the way and the nature of choice for patients. And in terms of waiting, absolutely. 10 years ago, we had thousands of people waiting over 18 months and 2 years for treatment. Now we have a scheme where no one waits from identifying the problem with their general practitioner to the end of their treatment. Then no one waits more than 18 weeks. And the average is about 7 weeks, which we think is about the European average. So we've made massive strides to make that happen. We've spent lots of money on doing it, but absolutely transformed access to the NHS.
What is the perception in England of this whole debate? It's still a work in progress, even though we have the Affordable Care Act. Who knows what's going to happen with it down the road? And there will certainly be people who continue to advocate for single-payer health care here. As this debate continues on, as people watch what's going on in America, what are they saying about the situation here?
I think two or three things. The first one, there's mystification, really, about how a country can spend twice as much as we do, 18% of its general GDP, and not get much better outcomes than you do. There's something seriously wrong about the way in which you organise your healthcare. Secondly, there's a misunderstanding and mystification about the mechanisms that you use. They seem very, very complex to us. They may make absolute sense to you, but they seem very complex to us. But the big thing, I think, that we genuinely can't understand is why people would not want 100% coverage. It seems to me that's what governments are for, in the sense of governments are for ensuring that people have access to high-quality healthcare. They don't have to run it, they don't have to organise it, but they need to make sure that it's there. So we can't really understand why people would argue against 100% coverage.
Veering the conversation toward your own personal life, you recently had to deal with your own health issues, including being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes on Christmas Eve 2012. How has that changed your life?
There's no doubt that it's quite a shock when it happens to you as an individual, because if you think about it, being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I guess in this country there are increasing numbers of people who are being diagnosed with such, if you think about it, what the GP said to me is that the complications are that potentially are you get heart failure, you can have your limbs amputated, you can get kidney failure, you're susceptible to a stroke, a whole series of things. And that's quite a shocking thing to face when someone does it. But the other thing that they say is that it's perfectly possible to do something about it. But it's all about the way in which you organise your lifestyle. And there's no doubt, although I understood and know what a good lifestyle is, the nature of the job that I had, and along with, to be frank, many middle-aged men, we genuinely sometimes do not take our health as seriously as we should do. So I've learned to control my own health, to control my own nutrition, to give myself the exercise that I've always known that I've needed. But it is quite a shock when it happens to you. But I was determined that I would take control of my own health and my own healthcare.
How much has that helped inform your ideas about healthcare?
Well, undoubtedly, it makes it more real. It absolutely brings it home to you. And if you think about my own country, we've got between 15 and 17 million people now who have one long-term condition or more, you know, diabetes, asthma, heart failure, all of these things. I guess it's even larger in terms of the United States. The pressure that potentially puts on any healthcare system is absolutely massive. And whilst you can invest in healthcare services, there is no shortcut to encourage and supporting people to live healthy lifestyles. And understanding that and seeing how healthcare can help people and support them live active and healthy lifestyles is even more important to me now than it was before.
What are you speaking about at the Global Health Conference here in Pittsburgh?
Okay, this is a really important conference for all sorts of reasons. And the reason it's so important is it's bringing people together from all over the United States and the world to think about how teamwork can improve services for patients. One of the things about the current debates around healthcare is people focus on the payment system, the way in which it's organised, the way money flows through the system, the way you put incentives in the system, all of those things, which are all important. But actually the real thing is how do health professionals work together to improve services for patients? And this is a fantastic opportunity to focus our attention on that thing, the thing that if we lose, forget it, or get it wrong, has massive impact on patients. So understanding that is really important. And particularly understanding that these days, it's not just about how good your doctor is. One of the things that I would say, and I discussed this this morning at the conference, it used to be that, I don't know, for example, for colorectal surgery, the most important thing people said was, I need a great surgeon. I need the best surgeon available to do the surgery and to help me. But we know now, to get the best possible outcome for someone who has colorectal cancer, you need a population that can understand the symptoms and present themselves to the right place at the right time. We know we need screening systems to enable us to help that. We need primary care systems to pick it up and identify the symptoms and make sure that they get properly treated. We need multidisciplinary teams in hospitals of oncologists, of surgeons, of pathologists who can put the right treatment plan together. And we need aftercare. You need all of those things. And the really important challenge for us is how do we get health professionals across all of those organizations and all those places working together for the benefit of patients.
As we go forward with our debate about healthcare and what should happen here in the United States, do you think single payer would work here?
I think it's probably a bridge too far at the moment for the American healthcare system. It's not part of your culture. It's not what you do. But I do think there's an important thing around the way the paying system operates. One of the things that we've learned is that we've significantly enhanced our ability to organise our payer by having clinicians involved in the decisions about how you let contracts and how you purchase healthcare. I think there's a lot to be said for getting more clinicians involved in your paying system and for your payers to work together. Because if you think about what I said about cancer, you'll need payers and providers to work together in partnership to get the best outcomes for patients. You don't have to put everybody in the same payer, but you do need to make sure that people work in partnership.
Sir David Nicholson is the former CEO of England's National Health Service. Thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Well, it's great to be here, and thanks for all the hospitality the people of Pittsburgh have offered me.
Our distinct pleasure. More Essential Pittsburgh coming up on 90.5 WESA.